It is so good to be with you this morning. Happy anniversary. 60 years. 60 faithful years. And I heard there will be cake. I was thinking of the congregation as if it were a human being getting up there in Middle Ages. Sometimes people at your congregational age have a midlife crisis and buy a sports car. And I was wondering, is this building your midlife crisis purchase? So many things could be done with that metaphor. And all kidding aside, that midlife crisis usually happens when we take stock and then panic, right? Thinking we're halfway through this thing we know is life. Is it too late? Have I done everything I intended to do? Does it even matter? Have I still got it? Am I still attractive? If I buy a building, will more people come? Well, I'm not 60 yet, but I am middle-aged, and I'm definitely taking stock. Have I set out to do what I intended to do? Do my children know the family stories well enough to retell them to my great-great-grandchildren? Do they know how to cook the handed-down recipes? Do they know who all the people are in the old photos and how they're related so that they can tell their children? I'm seeing some heads nodding, yes. Yesterday, I was working with your visioning task force, and we were looking at the collages of photos out in the hall. Have you seen those yet? They are glorious. Do enjoy them after worship. If you've been a part of this religious community for a while, you might see yourself in there. And please share the stories that are in those pictures. There's a lifetime there. There's a timeline. It turns out on that timeline, early on, within the first 10 years, a group actually bought property. Now, we estimated that when that happened, there couldn't have been more than about 10 members. 10 members bought property for a church building and for some congregation really yet to be. 10 people don't need a whole church building. These were people who loved you, you sitting here today, and imagined you, but hadn't met you yet. Can you imagine that kind of love? Well, prepare yourself, because I'm going to ask you to imagine that in a moment. An anniversary is a sweet time to think about how far you've come, and it's also a sweet time to look ahead. Your board has tasked a committee to rewrite your vision statement. You may be wondering, what's wrong with our current vision statement? Well, there's no delicate way to say this. It's expired. The last time you created one, you made a list of the things to accomplish, and you've done them all. Congratulations. Bravo. Good on you. And now I'm challenging you to stretch more. Write a vision statement for the next 60 years. As a matter of fact, those of you who are game, I encourage you to cross out on your sticky note where it says 10 to 15. And write 60 and imagine, what is it like to love people you probably will never meet and cast an intention for them in the next 60 years? Some of you may be thinking, 60 years, I won't even be around then. I know, that's the point. I had the vision task force try to imagine Bozeman in 60 years. Take a moment and let your imagination wander with that one. And your mind's eye, stroll down the streets of Bozeman in 2079. For some, that vision will be sci-fi. For some, dystopian. And for some, a psychedelic explosion of possibilities. Now, in your mind's imagination, wander up to the church building. Open the door to come to worship in 2079. What could the worship even look like, sound like? What does the congregation look like if you look around at who's with you? What does religious education look like? Our ways of welcoming new members, our pastoral care, our justice making. What could Bozeman UU Fellowship be like in 2079? What could Unitarian Universalism look like in 60 years? Members of the task force wrote down possibilities free form in silence, and then we shared. It was an interesting exercise, and then Mariah offered, bold, brave, and caring for others in uncertain times. She choked up a bit, which alerted my tears that holiness was happening. We had just earlier been thinking rather apocalyptically, honestly, of the future. Would there be enough water? What about size planning? Bold, brave, and caring for others in uncertain times. Mariah turned to thoughts of her 4-year-old daughter. And then someone else said celebration of survival and hope and love. And Neil said using technology to connect. And then somehow we got to what would it look like to be truly constructive partners with other religions? We broke through the imagination barrier into the realm of holy. And as a minister, I'm trained to look for it, and I assure you, it's here. Now, this task force is going to keep listening to you and keep imagining, and then they're going to discern, to pray on it, and take it to their dreams and whatever tools it takes to recognize it when the words and intentions click. I advise them at this point to hand it off to the musicians and the artists to have their way with the words. So it doesn't just live in our cerebral cortex, but it's embodied in artistic metaphor. That's how you know it's really living. I said, give it to the artist to render it into something so beautiful you would want to get it tattooed on your body. At which point someone in utter disgust made a face and said, oh no. I hate tattoos. So I'm going to tell you a story about my tattoo. In total respect, if this isn't your jam, it's fine. So I grew up in a small town in the Midwest, which was a lovely place to come up, except it was exceedingly racist and homophobic. Not the burn your house down kind of way, but that slow death of not our kind. Now, I had access to Sesame Street as a child, so I knew that there was something else out there and I was going to go find it. And when I went away to college, I kind of had an explosion with human rights notions of equality and activism. Oh, and I came out. And I converted to Unitarian Universalism. Upon graduating, I was sat down by my mother and told, it's time to get married, and it better be a white man. To her credit, I had given my family plenty of clues that it could be otherwise. And I'm going to condense a very long, complicated story here. So I married a white man. I love my family. We have 7 generations on farmland. And so to move away really spoke to my yearning for freedom. I married a white man who is an amazing father to my boys. But before I left my college campus, I graffitied a wall with a piece of art I had designed. It had gender signs and skin tones all intertwined, making up a peace sign. Now, this rebellious ritual was my declaration, my promise to the universe that I would dedicate my life to this notion, that people should be able to love whomever they choose, regardless of the body they are born into. This is my vision statement. That's what I'm talking about. My vision is that people will be able to love whomever they choose, regardless of the body they were born into. Now, I had to move away to even start building that. I never thought for a second I would see that in my lifetime. But I knew somehow, knowing that I came from 7 generations of strong people, that maybe in 7 generations it might be true. And it had to start with me. And if you go back to my alma mater, that place of a heavily graffitied wall remains untouched. So evidently it means something to other people as well. And I later got this image tattooed on my shoulder. Ever more serious about this life promise to dedicate my life to this vision that people can love whomever they choose, regardless of the body they are born into. So fast forward many, many years. My mother was flying out to meet the woman I wanted to marry. I was a bundle of nerves, even as a middle-aged woman. And I didn't need her approval, and yet it's my mother. I want that approval, right? And my older son invited me out for a walk at our usual park where we have our hard conversations. And it's usually me comforting or challenging him, not the other way around. He said, Mom, on the morning that we were to go get my mom, he said, Mom, let's go out for a walk, grab your coat. And I thought, what does he have to talk about? Something big is coming up, I can't handle this. I'm already dealing with my own thing. And once on the path, he put his arm around me. Mom, you know how you tell us how you moved away from Ohio to the Pacific Northwest so that him and his brother could love whomever we choose. Yes. Mom, we're grateful and we feel that freedom. And did you ever think that maybe it was for you too? At which point, he stopped on the trail and took me in his arms. It's okay, Mom. Don't worry about Grandma. I'll talk to Grandma. You don't need to explain it to her. We got you. Okay, now I can't see. Hold on. And then he went to the airport to pick her up. And there was a conversation before they got home. I'm not privy to it. But I know that I've never had to explain myself or choose or feel that unnecessary shame because my mom chose relationship with her grandsons and with me and with my wife. The person I sacrificed for by moving away from my family in order to liberate actually liberated me. And I think back to my young adult self who moved away to raise children to have a chance. If you would have told her, me, as a young adult, that I would live to see marriage equality, I would not have believed you. If you would have told me I would be able to marry the woman of my dreams, I would have just nodded and said, that's okay. But I would have hoped it for my kids. And that's what I want for you and your vision. To stretch into the most extravagant, liberating vision you can think of for the next generation. And in that process, you might find that you actually liberate yourselves. May it be so. Amen.